Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Registered representative, securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Investment Advisor Representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Fujiyama Wealth Management and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Junko Horvath, and this is another episode of Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour, brought to you by our good friends at Fujiyama Wealth Management, which helps women in transition. Happy New Year, Junko.
Happy New Year, Lee. How are you?
I am doing well. How about you?
Great.
Staying warm?
Staying warm, yeah. Yeah, working out.
You've been working out? Mm. Running? What exercise do you do?
Tabata.
Tabata?
Yeah, T-A-B-A-T.
What is that?
That's like a workout, really intense, 20 seconds.
20-second
yeah,
workout.
And then rest 10 seconds.
And I can be as skinny and healthy as you?
Yeah, I'm not skinny, but yeah, that's for just 15 minutes to like, you know, 20 minutes.
Wow.
Then yoga after that.
All right, sounds good.
So, yeah.
So you excited about the first episode of the year?
Oh, yeah. This is great. So I have a wonderful two guests.
So who do you got?
I have David Golden, a partner at the Trotman Sanders, and Barry Klein, a partner, and Carl Riggs and Ingram. So we start with David.
All right, David, welcome.
Right.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, David. So tell us what do you do exactly?
I'm an attorney with Troutman Sanders. We're one of the largest law firms in the country.
Wow.
My practice is focused on trusts and estates, estate planning with high net worth individuals, and also a little bit of income tax planning, typically with entrepreneurs.
Wow. So you are CPA and a lawyer?
I'm a CPA and an attorney, yes. Huh. My background is I graduated from Ohio State University many, many years ago and worked for the late, great Arthur Anderson for 3 years and got my certificate, then went to law school. And I've kept my CPA live up over the years with continuing education and such. So I'm a licensed CPA and an attorney.
I see. So how did you make a change from CPA to become a lawyer?
That's a great question. My father was a lawyer. Later became a judge, so I'd always thought about going to law school. But when I graduated from Ohio State undergraduate, I just wasn't ready to go right to school and wanted to work for a couple years. And everybody told me that you would never go back to school after you worked. So I always kept that in the back of my mind, wanting to prove people wrong. And after about 2.5 years at Arthur Anderson, 3 years, you had to stay 2 years to get your CPA. I passed the CPA exam and took a leave of absence and went to Georgia Law School and then ended up getting a job with Troutman Sanders.
So you became a student.
Indeed.
Yeah. Wow.
But it was a real advantage for me, I think, having been in the real world for a couple of years, to go back to school. Gave me a better appreciation of school, and I realized that it was important, you know, I had to succeed.
And you could prove people that you did
I proved them wrong. I went back. That's right.
That's great. So then which one do you like better? So what, of course, you like being a lawyer. How long have you been doing that?
I've been at Troutman Sanders 34 years.
Wow.
Started in 1984. I'm a dinosaur. I've been at the same firm my entire professional career.
How many other people are like you? That's amazing.
You know, at Troutman, there is one other person that started when I started who's still there.
Wow.
And there was probably a class, goodness, 17, 18 people. And
really?
Of course, today, you know, the millennials staying in one place like that is I guess, viewed as something terribly wrong happened in your career. But my theory always was that I was getting great work. I liked the people I worked with. I was always treated fairly. So I didn't buy off on the grass is greener theory.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's a value.
Right. That's unusual in today's world.
Yeah.
It is. But, you know, when I was coming up, that was the goal, to go to a place, stay there, work hard, make partner, and live happily ever after. And we had I'm in the tax department. We had a young lawyer a couple years ago who was doing very well and wanted to leave just to get just to do something different at another law firm. Folks generally, it seems today, don't envision staying somewhere long term. It's just not part of the culture these days.
Now, what about at Troutman? Do they just accept that as this is the way it is, or do they put things in place to try to give the younger person more options or, you know, more paths to go down?
That's a great question. No, obviously, you spend a lot of money training folks, so you want them to stay. And we have an in-house education tool called Troutman Sanders University. We spend a lot of time educating people. And we want them to stay because you make an investment in them. But the reality of it is that, you know, most don't.
Yeah, get whatever they can get and go to next.
That's right. That's right, unfortunately.
So that's a great value. So beside work, what do you do? What do you enjoy? Sports? Or?
Besides work? There are things besides. Okay. Besides work, I really like politics, not participating in politics, but following it. I would never participate in it, but I enjoy following it, especially the recent times. Enjoy sports. I have season tickets to all the pro sports in Atlanta, the Falcons, the Braves, and the Hawks. I like to.
What about the soccer? You get on
board
that?
The soccer. I'm so damn old that, you know, soccer when I was coming up was very foreign to me, and I really don't understand it. I will say, though, that I did watch the Atlanta United championship game.
Did you go to the game?
I did not go, but I did watch. I took time out to watch it, and I kind of sort of understood what was going on. I did watch the World Cup. I understand it's you know, the next great thing, and people. The soccer folks in the United States have been talking about soccer becoming more and more popular. And it's certainly happening. There are, 70-some thousand people. But I really, you know, offsides, things like that, I don't understand. But
I don't understand the goings-on either. But the energy in that stadium
it was incredible.
It's not like any other sport that I've been to.
No, from what I understand, folks will stand up the entire game. Which at my age is a difficult thing, but for younger people they can do it. And it is incredible energy, and it's. I used to think it was kind of like watching grass grow, but it actually is interesting, and there's some strategy. And I did watch a little bit of the World Cup, so I'm trying to give it a chance.
Great.
Now, how as you working and your career has evolved, how do you kind of in your mind do you shift into, okay, now this is my legacy, this is the impact I'm going to make? Do you make some changes in your, you know, do what you're doing or aiming slightly differently as your career evolves?
You know, from day one, and the culture of the firm is to be very client-centric and to do the best job you possibly can for your clients. And that's guided me my whole career, and it just becomes more and more important. The longer you're there, you work on, you know, bigger deals, higher net worth folks, the impact of what you're doing is greater, and really just a client-centric environment, making sure you're doing the best job for your client. And it's rewarding.
And that
rewarding.
Service mentality, were you always had that, or is it something?
Yeah, that even back at Arthur Andersen, that was the mentality. And I enjoy helping other people. That's why I do what I do. I would not have made it as a litigator. I just don't have the personality.
Yeah.
My approach is let's all try to get along, which would not work in the litigation context at all. It's like, why are we fighting about this? Can't we settle? But so in my practice, I'm helping folks. It's really not an adversarial type. Occasionally with the IRS, but by and large, you're trying to help people achieve objectives, minimize taxes, which I really enjoy.
And that's a gift that you were able to find kind of your lane and then really embrace that, and it kind of meshes with your personality.
Absolutely. As I said, if I would have had to be a litigator, I'd be sweeping streets. That wouldn't have worked because I'd be trying to work things out.
You're amicable. Yeah,
that's right.
I know. So just give one example of helping your client.
I had a client, maybe 5-6 years ago. He had started a business. At the time, the business was you know, just startup, wasn't big value, but wanted to move some of that value to his three children, wanted to do that in a tax-efficient manner. And I advised him to set up something called a GRAT, a Grantor Retained Annuity Trust, which is an estate planning technique that is specifically mm-hmm. sanctioned in the Internal Revenue Code. Yeah. It's not aggressive. You can sleep well at night mm-hmm. when you recommend it to a client. You have to make sure you do it right, where you transfer stock to this trust over a term of years. You get back some of the stock, and then whatever's left at the end of the term goes to his kids. Well, he put in stock, he and his wife put in stock with a value of about $2 million. The trust lasted for 5 years. At the end of that 5-year period, the business was sold right before the trust terminated, and the kids each got $10 million each, $30 million
yeah.
without paying any transfer tax. And I made lots of friends with his kids. They were very happy with that result. But that was a very rewarding transaction.
That's amazing.
And is that by design to have relationships with the whole family?
You try. It's a great question because it can be difficult because oftentimes there can be conflicts within a family. And to do multi-generational representation that reason can be difficult. But that's the goal, absolutely, to help the parents accumulate the wealth and make sure the kids keep it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I want to hear about beside work, you know, what kind of life you had. So what was your family like around the dinner table when you were growing up?
Yeah, we had a very close family. I had a younger brother. We had dinner as a family every night. I was expected to be home by 6 or 6:30. My mother always reminded me she was not running a restaurant, and dinner was at a certain time, and my bottom better be there. And we would, you know, my dad was a lawyer, became a judge, and he would often talk about interesting cases. He was a municipal court judge in Columbus, Ohio, so he had very interesting dealing, you know, with average people and the problems they had. And he always had fascinating cases, and we would talk about cases. We talk about politics, but we weren't watching TV or, you know, of course, back then there weren't cell phones, we had family dinners every night. That was very important.
Yeah, that's a value. That's amazing.
Right. More and more families should keep that tradition alive, I think.
Yeah, sadly, I think it's kind of gone by the wayside with everybody's schedule, and it's not a priority. But if you make it a priority, I think it makes a difference.
Yeah, it makes an impact in the family. It keeps everybody kind of together.
Yeah, exactly.
But now, like you said, they're not only are they not able to fit in the schedule, even if they are together, each one's on their phone doing their own kind of parallel play there.
Now, back in the 60s and 70s, there weren't nearly the distractions that there
that's true.
that there are available today. But nonetheless, it was a great family time, and we look forward to it every evening.
Yeah, that's true. So most people have had at least one person who really seems to make a difference in their lives. What the person for you? Who was the person?
That's a great question. It'd have to be my dad, who really instilled values in me early on to treat people like I wanted to be treated, to always be kind and considerate, say thank you, please, never take anything for granted, try to be humble, don't brag about whatever. He also taught me early on never to burn any bridges with anybody because you never know what might happen in life, and that turned out to be extraordinarily good advice because you do never know. But my dad had a big influence on me. Obviously, I chose the same career he did.
That's a great story. Yeah. So if you look at your life like EKG or Dow Jones average, there are probably some ups and some downs. What are your ups? What are your downs?
Sure. My ups would have to be my son was born. That was a big up. When I made partner at Troutman Sanders, which I worked so hard for, was also a very rewarding time.
Yeah.
The downs, sadly, Junko, I'd lost a child to SIDS, which was a terrible thing that you don't wish upon anybody. You know, you expect your parents to go, whatever, but you never expect a little baby. That was terrible. Then my brother passed away, sadly, about 5 years ago, and that was very, very sad.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
So now, in your career, are you having the opportunity to mentor some of the younger people?
I do. I do work with some younger folks. I hope that they will stay and not not leave. But yes, and then that it's fun to work with younger people and try to give them a sense of your knowledge and to help them and to help bring them along. And I enjoy that. It's a big part of my practice.
Do you find the younger people like what's your take on them? Are they? It seems like we talked about they. Have that kind of short attention span. They like to maybe job hop, but it seems like that's a symptom for something else.
Yeah, I don't want to generalize, but when I was coming up, the question was, how high can I jump? What can I do? What more can I do? And I'm just not sure the younger kids have that same worth ethic that I had when I was coming along. I was always, what can I do for the firm? How can I get more business? How can, whatever? And I think that the younger kids are a little more focused on themselves, their own career, trying to make their own path rather than trying to really work for the common good. And that's a generalization. There's obviously exceptions, but that's my sense at least.
So now, do you just think that's just the way that is in this cycle? Because people, generations come and go.
Yeah, that's my sense. It goes with not wanting to stay and make a career at a place, wanting to move.
But have roots and kind of embrace.
Well, that's from what I understand, the younger kids now don't embrace homeownership like folks in my generation did because
they don't want to own.
They want the ability to move on a dime, and it's just a very different mentality. I mean, when I was coming up, I wanted to get married, have a family, buy a house, and make partner at the law firm.
And I did.
But I don't know if those, I don't know if someone coming up today that
have those same
shares
goals.
Those same goals at all. I think it's spend a couple years here, learn what I can, move here, learn what I can, and then start my own business and make $1 million or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, nowadays, when you are mentoring them, are you seeing them? Are they hungry for your wisdom?
They do. That's a great question. They do seem to appreciate. Mm. They listen, and they do seem to appreciate that I'm trying to help them. Let them know the mistakes I made. Here's the way to do something. They do seem to appreciate. They really do. And that's rewarding for me.
Yeah, and they know so much more about technologies.
Well, they're digital natives, right? They grew up with
it.
They're so quick and figure out, like Chris. It's amazing,
They're light years beyond whatever. I turn on the computer. It's a good day.
That's right. So let's talk about the money. What's your philosophy on money?
Junko, what I've tried to do is live below my means so that I'd have enough when I do retire and save as much as possible and, not spend for the fanciest car or the biggest house, live comfortably but try to live below my means, which I think has served me well. I'm not sure very many other people share that philosophy.
You're very humble, yeah.
But it's worked for me.
Yeah.
But most of my – you would know better than I – most of my high net worth clients like to – let everyone know they got a bunch of money and buy big houses, several of them, and have the latest, fanciest cars, boats, and all. And each to his own.
Right. It's a that's interesting. So your clients, they're not kind of following your model.
No,
you got to meet them where they are. Right.
No, that's right. And look, everybody's got their own lifestyle, and I respect what they do. And but it's. To me, you're better off living a little bit below your means rather than trying to live at or even above your means. I mean, some folks make a significant amount of money, yet borrow money from their 401k to pay their taxes. So there's lawyers at our law firm. Not everybody's careful with money.
Yeah, I understand.
Right,
that.
You probably say that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Exactly.
In fact, I think at school, there ought to be a mandatory course as to how to manage it. Because that's one skill that schools really don't teach, and it's so important. But most people, just don't focus on it and kind of spend what they have, no matter how much money.
Do you think
they
make. It's because of all this materialism and there's so much temptation, and they don't kind of think about tomorrow as much as they think about
absolutely
today.
You live for the moment.
And no education. The school really should have it, but they don't. Yeah, that's the problem.
I guess that's our role, right? We got to help educate
young
people. So this
there's
kind of
another way,
helps.
Right?
Yeah. So what does retirement mean to you?
You know, that's a great question. I don't play golf, so it doesn't mean playing golf. I would hopefully, when I do retire, like to still help people. Mm-hmm. There's always volunteer opportunities. Mm-hmm. And really, what I've seen over the years are that my clients who just kind of, when they retire, just step back, don't stay engaged. Mm-hmm. Sadly, those are the folks who mm-hmm. tend to pass the earliest.
Yeah, that's true.
And tend to don't want to avoid that. So I think mm-hmm. it's very, very important, even if you are retired, to stay mm-hmm. engaged, do something, find some sort of passion and
pursue it. You have to have some why, right? There has to be some reason to get up every day mm-hmm. and do something that
absolutely.
Has meaning.
Exactly. And if you, purpose.
Right. You need life. A purpose. And mm-hmm. so if you don't have that, it's easy to, you know, mm-hmm. think like, why am I here? Because
no, that's right. I've talked to physicians who echo that it really makes just having that positive outlook, keeping your mind engaged, gives you a much longer, healthier life than those that, you know, kind of go on the beach and drink whatever and usually get sick and don't have as nearly a successful retirement.
So the last question, what do you do to keep or increase your health, wealth, and happiness?
Great question. Wealth, I try to live below my means and save as much as I can. Mm-hmm. And hope that the market keeps going up. As far as health, I try to work out just about every day. I do the treadmill 5 days a week, lift weights 3 days a week, and have some downtime, you know, read, that sort of thing.
Great.
But exercise is important to me, very important.
Yeah. So if somebody wanted to learn more about your firm or what you do, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Sure. We have a website, Troutman, TROUTMAN.com. And my email address, if you want to get in touch with me, is my name with a dot, david.golden, G-O-L-D-E-N, at Troutman.com.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, David. Yeah, it was fun. So now going to Barry Klein. He's a CPA and a partner from Carr, Riggs and Ingram. Thank you, Barry, for coming.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. So what type of CPA, what exactly do you do?
All right. So what I do is tax planning for my clients, business consulting, help them achieve their goals, help them with succession planning and exit strategies, and just generally trying to add value to their lives and to their businesses.
So you work with many business owners?
Yeah, work with business owners and then the actual businesses and then the individuals that own them.
Oh, I see. Great. How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing this for 35 years.
So 1 year longer than David. Wow. Yeah. So tell us about how you became a CPA. How did you start?
Right. So very simple. I was not a very good scholar, but in high school, I aced accounting. I'm from South Africa originally, and accounting is a course in high school, which I found very useful. So I would almost score 100% on my accounting tests, and the rest of my tests weren't very, very good. So it became obvious that to me that was my path. And so that's how I became a CPA.
So you became a CPA in South Africa. So when did you come here?
I arrived in the United States on December the 31st, 1986.
Okay. So, but when you came, the CPA of South Africa, it wasn't accepted here, right?
No, it wasn't. So when I came, I had to retake the CPA exam, but I didn't have to go back to college to school to get other credits. The credits that I had in South Africa carried across to the USA.
Oh, I see. So you just had to take the exam. Yeah. What's the difference? What? How did you feel about the difference?
You know, auditing standards are more or less the same worldwide. It was getting used to the income tax side of it that was different.
Uh-huh. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Which test was easier?
The one here.
Oh, really?
Because when I took the chartered accountant exam in South Africa, there were five parts. If you passed four and you failed one, you failed them all.
Oh, wow.
You had to get them all at the same time. Now, that's since changed because I think that was not very smart, but that's what made it so difficult.
And it was an easier test here?
No, it was still a hard test, but here you could carry forward ones that you passed.
And you had already learned and had been doing this for a while.
Yeah, right. Yes, it made it a bit easier.
So you in the same farm?
Yeah, so when I came from South Africa, I joined a local firm here for about, I was there for a year and a half. And then I was very fortunate after a year and a half to join a local firm by the name of Babish, Neiman, Kornman and Johnson. They'd been in business for, at the time, 40 years and made my career there. We had about 60 people. And then 2 years ago, we merged with Carr, Riggs & Ingram, which is a regional firm. We've got locations in 8 or 9 states, and we got a lot of a very good presence here in Atlanta.
Wow.
There's a lot of consolidation now, right?
Yeah, there is. You know, you get more resources, better training. So there are a lot of ups. There are a lot of advantages.
You got used to it, the change?
It took a while, but I've gotten used to it, and I really like the extra resources that I now got to help serve my clients. So,
what about from like a corporate culture standpoint? How was that integration?
We did a lot of due diligence before in the merger process, and so we found that Carr, Riggs & Ingram shared the same values, the same a desire to serve our clients and always do what's in the best interest of the client. And then, of course, quality and integrity. So I went around the country. We interviewed other officers. And so we were very comfortable that this
was. So you were very mindful, like it had to be a fit from a culture standpoint, right?
Yes. And we wanted to make sure that our current people were going to be taken care of, that there wasn't going to be mass layoffs the day after we merged. And there was something that occurred when we with the merger. So all in all, it's been a pretty good thing.
Yeah. So you are like David in the same place for many, many years.
Yeah.
That's a value that we don't see lately.
Yeah. In South Africa, I was with a local firm. I was a partner in a local firm. And then I've had 3 interviews in my life, and I've had 3 jobs.
You're undefeated.
That's 3 for 3.
That's unbelievable. So what do you do besides work? Any sports, clubs, causes?
Yeah, so
I bet you made it to an Atlanta United game.
Well, yeah, I'm a soccer fanatic. My brother played for the South African national team.
Wow.
And I made it to the AAA level but could never make the big leagues, unfortunately. And I'm also an avid cyclist. I cycle in the summer here around Atlanta, and I do bicycling trips around the country with a company, Free Advertisement, Backroads. It's just phenomenal.
How many miles?
What's your personal best?
75 miles in one day, but
but
the one trip, when you go on a trip, you bike every day. My best was I averaged 50 miles a day for 5 straight days, so that was pretty cool.
What's your body like after that trip?
Sore. Yeah.
What do you enjoy about cycling?
Just getting exercise, low impact exercise, and I'm able to mentally unwind. And I'm able to think and get things in perspective when
I
cycle.
So you don't listen to music? You just kind of are in the moment in nature?
Just out in nature, the wind blowing in your face and just zoning out and thinking about stuff and no interruptions. And it's just you and the road and getting good exercise.
What about like the cars and the traffic here? It's crazy.
It's a problem.
it's a problem. Dangerous.
Yeah.
So do you drive out to like more secluded places and that's where you do the cycling?
Yes. I do. When I first started, and I've been doing this for a long, long time, I would go out to Forsyth County. We'd go during the week as well, and we would cycle out there. But now it's just impossible to even get out there. So on weekends, I get into my car and I go up 400, and I got a place where I've been going forever, and I just
like through the mountains.
No, it's more just in more rural areas, and it's not as busy on the weekends.
So then you go you just find a spot and then just go off the highway into like more kind of less people, less populated areas?
Yes.
And it's probably beautiful there, right?
Yeah, it's nice, and it's you still got pastures and cows and stuff. Yeah.
What about Silver Comet Trail? Yeah. Have you done that?
Silver Comet Trail, I do sometimes. The only problem with that is it's level. And I like rolling hills, yeah.
But that's a nice thing to do, right? To create that?
Yeah.
Are you seeing that more and more, that like they're taking these old railroad tracks and repurposing them?
Yeah, I mean, the Silver Comet Trail is really popular. And it's
packed?
Yeah, the beginning portions are packed, but as you get further out, it's not as busy.
Because it goes all the way to Alabama, right?
Yeah, over 50 miles it stretches. Yeah. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really good. And then I do spinning classes if I can't get out on the road. Mm-hmm. And then I work out in the gym twice a week. So,
That's pretty good.
Health is an important part of
it. Yeah, health is important. This is a topic of my
health is wealth.
Health, wealth, and happiness. So what was your family like around the dinner table?
I'm similar to David. You know, I've got a brother and a sister, and we usually had dinner together. You expected to be there.
Yeah.
One of the lessons I learned at the dinner table was from my parents. If you put that food on your plate, you eat it. There was no waste.
Oh, wow.
And so rather take less and add on, but if it goes on there, you're going to eat it.
Oh, interesting. So, it's like the Japanese way. Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. In Japan, like, you can't really leave the food. It's waste, whether you like it or not.
So you take smaller portions and then go back for more?
No, because it's already given. It was already given.
To you.
Like three slices of bread. I was the smallest kid. I couldn't eat. It's hard. It's very hard. Wow. Yeah, because everybody's body is different.
Right.
But it's more, it's not individualized.
Waste is a bad thing.
Yeah, waste is a bad thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So great. Most people have had at least one person who really seems to make a difference in their lives. Do you have any?
Yeah, I've actually got two. My mom was really influential with me. She taught me the value of respecting other people, showing up when you say you're going to show up, treating people with respect. The other thing she also taught me is to, even if you, wherever you go, whether anyone who serves you, whether it's a cleaning person, a server, whatever, you make a point of saying hello to them and thank them for what they do. Mm. And that's held me in good stead.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Important. Yeah.
It is because a lot of these folks do a good job, and most of the time they're ignored, and they really appreciate if someone just acknowledges them and says,
"Right,
you know,
it's dignity. You know, they should have the respect.
Yeah, right. And the respect. Yeah, it's very good.
Right. So. And then my partner unfortunately has passed away, Bill Johnson. One of the things he taught me is that you really ought to enjoy doing what you're doing.
Mm.
You got to have fun, because sadly there's about 65 or 70% of people today are not happy with what they do. Mm. And I just couldn't imagine having to get up every morning and going to a job or a place of work and not enjoying what you're doing. So even though accounting's a serious business, we have fun doing it. We do.
Right. Imagine that 2/3 of the people are spending the vast majority of their day doing something they're not enjoying. Mm. I mean, that's sad.
Yeah, it is.
You must be enjoying your work so much.
We do. We have a good time, and we committed to serving our clients.
Yeah, now, what's the part that you enjoy? Is it the accounting part or the consulting part?
People.
The
different people, the different forging relationships, bringing value, helping them be successful. That's all very rewarding, and being in public accounting, you get in front of different situations. You don't do the same thing every day,
right?
Huh. And so I enjoy that, and I enjoy the challenges. And then what you learn from one client can sometimes help others,
right? And so, then it's kind of like a problem solving thing, right? Like you're trying to help them achieve a goal or an outcome. So you're
right. So compliance is also very important, but how do you add value?
Right.
That's the question.
Yeah. So give one example of that you helped some client.
Maybe in a surprising way or an interesting way.
Yeah, so, well, I can think of one instance. I got a phone call from someone. They said they were in a lot of trouble. They had a current CPA, and they were in trouble with the IRS, and the IRS was asking them for $950,000, including interest and penalties, and it had become very adversarial with the current CPA firm, and it was actually an investment advisor that called me and said, would I take a look at the situation? And I did take a look at the situation, and we didn't really have a whole lot to go by, but we took on the case, and what we found was by making the situation not be adversarial and jumping through certain hoops, we got it dropped it to 950,000 to 75,000, and I had a very, very satisfied client and happy client. And
for the rest of their lives,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah. That's great.
And then there's some other instances just of tax savings for clients. One client, we got them jobs credits that they didn't know about, and to date, we've got them 800,000 in jobs credits. So just that kind of stuff, adding value.
This is what you do every day, so you know all the intricacies, where the business owner, they're doing whatever they do, so they don't know where there's opportunities. And
exactly. What I want to do is every legal tax saving strategy that's out there, I want to bring it to the attention of the client, and then they can decide whether it works for them or not. But I don't want them to hear it from anyone else.
So you got to be kind of a lifelong learner, right? You got to be really staying on top of things and understanding trends. And
yes, and that's the toughest part. So when you're in a slightly larger firm, that's all some certain people do. They stay on top of this thing, and then you get updated. And so it really helps add value and bring value to the clients. Yeah.
Oh, that's great, Mary. Yeah. So let's say you had a young person here in front of you, or you are watching a young 20-year-old that when you are 20 years old. What kind of advice would you give?
So the advice I would give them is this. Do what you say you're going to do. Show up when you say you're going to show up. And if you say you're going to deliver something on Friday, deliver it. And if you can't deliver it, pick up the phone, call the client or call whoever and let them know you can't deliver it. Because I found that also a large percentage of people in business don't do that. They don't show up when they say they're going to show up. They're not reliable. They're not responsible. And so if assuming 65% of folks are like that, then you're only competing with 35% on knowledge and values and all that kind of stuff. So very, very important to be reliable, to be dependable. And then the last thing I would tell you is to always do what's in the interest of the client, even if it's not in your financial interest.
Mm-hmm. So not in the firm's financial, it might be better for the client. Like sometimes I'm sure you have to say, maybe we're not a right fit for you. Maybe you have to go to this other resource that we don't have that.
Yeah, sometimes, and I'll get another example, I had a client that was getting an audit every year, audit done every year, and we were charging a nice fee. And after a while, I said to him, why are we getting this audit? Mm-hmm. He said, well, we've always got it. Well, why do you need it? And when he told me why he needed it, he really didn't need it anymore.
Right. Mm.
So I advised him not to do the audit and saved him this annual fee, and he's been a client of mine for 27 years.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And even though the firm makes less, but it's better for the client.
Yeah. And I even had one associate of mine said, he's happy. He's always getting it. Why are you even questioning it?
Because it's not in his best interest. That's why.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
But that's a philosophy, right? That's a value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not, and business can't always be about squeezing every dollar out of a client. It should be serving them in the best way possible.
Exactly.
And the other thing I will say is that sometimes it's difficult because you try to rationalize why it's a good idea for your client when you know it really isn't because it's so valuable for you, and you just got to win those battles. And so fortunately up to now, I think I'm doing okay.
Yeah, good.
Now, but why was that? I mean, not every business person has that kind of value system. Like, how did you kind of develop that value system?
Just, I guess, from my upbringing, from what I was taught as a youngster, and also – I had a situation where I just knew it was the right thing to do. I did it for a certain client, and it came back to be very, very rewarding for me down the road. So I guess that's how it all evolved.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about the money. What's your philosophy on money?
All right. So money doesn't guarantee happiness, but it does help.
Yeah.
So for me, money is important, but it's not the all end all. So what I want to do, my philosophy on money is to, similar to David's, you want to live within your means. But I do have some weaknesses. Nice cars.
And, sure, a nice bike. I've got a nice bike.
I saw it, yeah.
And so we try and enjoy some of those. Uh-huh. But it's not about keeping up with the Joneses. Money doesn't make you superior to other people. Mm-hmm. And for me, I just want to have enough when I retire that I can live comfortably. And if I need good care, to be able to afford good care.
Yeah. So what does retirement mean to you? What would you be doing?
It's a good question. One thing I do know, I could never do nothing. Hmm. I've had so many clients that have retired and they didn't think it through properly and it was a disaster for them.
Yeah.
The one client told me, you know, golf's no fun anymore. Golf used to be fun. When you can do it every day, it's not fun.
It's not fun, right?
Yeah, it's exactly. Being able to get away and what have you. So and then he also had a beautiful house on the beach, and after a year he sold it. And I said, but you got this beautiful house on the beach overlooking the ocean. And he said, after a month, you don't even see the view anymore. And then laying outside, the wind's blowing, it blows my newspaper out of my hand. I'm listening to this going, really? So I guess what I'm saying with all of this, it needs to be thought out carefully. But I would want to stay busy. Mm-hmm. I would find some – definitely get more involved in charity work and continue to exercise and travel and attend some of the major sporting events around the world,
ones
that I haven't been to already.
Now, how important is that kind of plan for a legacy, like, in, you know, leave a mark in the world? Is that important to you?
For me, what I want to do is I want to make sure my family's taken care of, and it's very hard to make a difference for a whole lot of people. Mm-hmm. So my intention is to select a handful of people that I've come to know over the years and make a difference in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, my last question. What do you do to keep or increase your health, wealth, and happiness?
You just keep exercising, continue to exercise, work hard, and don't live beyond your means. Mm-hmm. And hire a – one of the things I haven't really mentioned here, and you really need to hire a competent investment advisor. Mm-hmm. It's very important from a perspective to make sure that your funds are handled correctly, that you've done some planning to make sure that down the road you will on retirement you'll have enough. Mm-hmm. And you need to have someone that you can trust that's going to act in your best interest as far as investments go, that the investments are going to be what benefits you and not the advisor. So for me, a sound financial advisor is a key part.
Mm-hmm. And that's for the peace of mind?
Peace of mind and, you know.
Growth.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit paranoid about running out of money down the road. I've seen lots of clients have millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, and in their old age end up with almost nothing. So through bad investments, through living beyond their means, and through unscrupulous investment advisors. So that's why it's such a hot button with
me. Choose wisely.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more about your firm and your practice, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, Carr, Riggs & Ingram. That's on the – we got a website. And my personal email address is bklein@cricpa.com.
Good stuff.
Great.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you, David and Barry. That's a great show.
I know. Another great show, Junko.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Junko Horvath. This has been Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour, brought to you by our good friends at Fujiyama Wealth Management, which helps women in transition.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Registered representative, securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Investment advisor representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Fujiyama Wealth Management and Cambridge are not affiliated.